So am I still waiting, waiting a long time,
waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to Review Juve.
Ladies and gentlemen, the winner is you, heavyweight champion of the world, Goldberg.
Oh, look at me.
I guess he's the world champion.
I'm living in that 21st century. Do it better than anybody ever seen. Do it, scream from the haters. Got a nice ring to it. I guess every superhero needs his theme music. No one man to have all that power. The clock's ticking, I just count the hours. Stop tripping, I'm tripping off the power. The system broken, the schools closed, the prisons open.
Waiting. It's time for Review Away. It's very late on a Sunday night. I just want to go home and enjoy the weekend.
Yeah, well, you know, you're used to it by now. You've been doing this show for how long?
Over a year.
You've been doing the law for even longer than that.
Quite a while. But tonight, Way, we're going to be chatting about...
You're used to not having a Sunday evening.
Yeah, I haven't had a Sunday off in quite some time. The last time I think I had a Sunday off was...
When was the last time you watched...
I went to a Spice Girls concert on a Sunday night once, and I took the night off the law.
That was the one thing, that was the thing to end your streak, was the Spice Girls.
The Spice Girls interrupted my my long streak.
Mm.
And then other than that, the only thing I can think of was when you and I went to WrestleMania. That was a Sunday, but it was still kind of present on the law. My voice was still heard that night on the law. Lots of stuff to chat about tonight, Way. Before we start... I'm curious if you've been watching the current season of The Ultimate Fighter and what you've thought of the show.
I have. I haven't actually seen this past week's episode.
Neither have I, actually. So
I've actually really enjoyed this year's season of The
Ultimate
Fighter.
I've really enjoyed the coaches because it's playing out where Josh Koscheck is just trying to be such a shit disturber to George St. Pierre, and St. Pierre will not come down to his level.
Mm-hmm.
He just turns a blind, not a blind eye to it, but just ignores it and says, I am above this person, despite all the prodding. And then come UFC 124, that's when he's going to punch this guy in the face.
Exactly.
And in a weird way, I see a parallel between this and the Wade Barrett, John Cena thing, where every week Cena is just getting prodded until he's finally going to attack Wade Barrett for the big angle.
I can see that. I can see that. Although,
one's going to be super successful and the other will not be.
No, I think the Cena, if you're talking about the Cena thing being not being successful, I think it will be successful. They're drawing so much heat with this. This is the hottest angle in pro wrestling right now.
So you think this will build up to a pay-per-view that will do above average pay-per-view buys?
I'm not saying that, but
then it's not going to be successful. Okay. It's not going to make a difference.
I think it will, actually. I think it will. If you save it for Survivor Series, and you know, if they hype a huge...
See, Survivor Series is in, like, 4 weeks.
They could hold off until then. Well, they will hold off until then. Perhaps even longer. But this season of The Ultimate Fighter, exactly like what you said, George St. Pierre, for him, it would be out of character for him to be trash-talking, first of all, because he admits, you know, English is not his first language. He wouldn't be able to match wits that way with Josh Koscheck. But secondly, the way St. Pierre handles Koscheck, it's almost as if he is so far superior to Koscheck that he just looks down on this fool talking to him. And in fact, the explanations that he gives for why he won't stoop down to that level are just so much more, they're more cockier than anything that he could say on a trash-talking level.
I think this season has really helped the image of George St. Pierre that I think a lot of people were somewhat getting tired of, or just that he was almost too prepackaged in all of his interviews and the way he comes across it. I think this season has done him a lot of good, and he's come off very well in this season. And I've really enjoyed this season thus far of Ultimate Fighter.
Because fights have been good, too.
Yeah, the fights have been good.
Lightweights are always very exciting.
I mean, this series has gotten very stale at certain points. Mm. I thought season 10 got a bit of life with the Kimbo Slice involvement, but then
Rampage and Rashad as well.
Yeah, Rampage and Rashad.
Last year, I didn't even watch with Tito and Chuck.
Yeah, it was just more and more. You're just getting a very formulaic presentation that I like this kind of dynamic they have.
Who would you like to see coach the next season?
Chael Sonnen.
Chael Sonnen and who?
Anybody.
Would Chael Sonnen, while suspended, to coach the Ultimate Fighter?
Why not? I mean, it is kind of rewarding the guy at the same time.
He shouldn't even be employed while under suspension.
Well,
shouldn't be making any money if you're being suspended for drugs.
They never actually say if the coaches are paid for doing this. It's always
yeah, they are.
Sure, they are. At the same time, I mean, what is the UFC going to deny Chael Sonnen the ability to go out and do autograph sessions and other kind of stuff, Q&As, while he's suspended?
But I agree with you. I would love that. And I would love to see that against Wanderlei Silva. They already have a bit of a feud going on.
They've kind of built that all up already with that one little video where they were both in the same car together. And you have two polar, like, everybody loves Wanderlei Silva.
Loves Wanderlei.
And Chael Sonnen's almost at the point you have to put him against someone like that because people are starting to get into Chael Sonnen. Mm-hmm. And I think against the right guy like a Wanderlei, everyone's going to side with Wanderlei and just hate Sonnen.
Absolutely. Either that or Chris Lieben has suggested that he and Wanderlei be an Ultimate Fighter season coach, and that would be entertaining as well.
He's another guy that might be under some kind of problems with the law.
This middleweight division.
These charismatic guys are just
too charismatic for their own
either
good.
Either drunks or using too much testosterone. Well, let's get into the review way. It's Halloween Havoc 1999. It took place Sunday, October the 24th from Las Vegas, Nevada. And for those that we can put this into context for you of what was going on in WCW at the time, Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara had just come over. They wrote their first Nitro this past Monday going into this pay-per-view, which was interesting that they had them do that rather than just kind of wrap up things here on this pay-per-view and then they'd start fresh the Monday after the pay-per-view. And I think that was the original plan. And then they decided, no, we're going to move it up a week and they would go into this pay-per-view. So we start the show off way with terrible opening graphics package promoting the Bill Goldberg Sid Vicious match for later tonight. And
what are you going to try to recap the storyline? Sid versus Goldberg.
Okay, here's the deal, everybody. Bill Goldberg was on that streak that got him over, and then eventually lost to Kevin Nash. And they started doing this thing with Sid Vicious where he was going to recreate his own streak, and he would beat guys. But then it just got ridiculous where he would choke slam guys and that would add to his streak. He would punch people and that would add to his streak. And they called him the Millennium Man. So it was the two masters of the streak going into this I Quit match of who is the dominant wrestler.
And then what was the thing with the contract? I didn't even watch close enough, but they said like Sid drew up some contract saying Goldberg can't touch him. Did you catch that?
No, I didn't.
But that was Shivani goes nuts when Goldberg touches Sid. He's like, he touched him. That was the part of the promo that stuck out to me.
So they created their own stiff and they broke it right away. Awesome. This video features Goldberg yelling, "I've never been so serious about kicking another man's ass." And then we see Sting and Hulk Hogan. They are the other part of the main event. Sting had just turned heel. Everybody.
Yeah. Heel Sting versus a babyface Hulk Hogan.
Yes.
Was Hulk Hogan absent prior to this Halloween Havoc? Was this his like big return or something?
No.
Well, he was always there.
Yeah, he had been on television, as I recall.
Okay.
Your announcers for tonight are Tony Schiavone and Bobby Heenan. They announce right away that Rey Mysterio has suffered a knee injury and the powers that be have stripped Rey and Conan of the tag titles, and they will be decided in a three-team match with Conan and Kidman. Conan just held the titles. Harlem Heat, and the First Family, who I had no clue who this team was. I do not recall the First Family they came out.
And the powers that be, of course, are Russo and Ferreira, who they didn't identify by names, but they just they assumed you knew who they were.
Yeah. This was a part of the, all our fans must be on the internet.
Yeah.
And we're aware that we now have new writers behind the scenes.
And we all know that wrestling is not really real. Everybody's following a script, so let's see how this script plays out. And let's see who disobeys the script.
Imagine doing this on Friends. the writer from like Mad About You had just come over, and now all the actors were. It wasn't Monica anymore. Yeah. It was Courtney Cox,
yeah.
And she would refer to Jennifer Aniston as Jennifer instead of Rachel on the show.
That's right.
And talk about
maybe they want Ross and Rachel to hook up again, and then David Schwimmer's like, "No, I can't do this. I don't want to do this. I'm leaving."
This was what WCW was like at this time, folks. It was horrible. I don't even know. There's some stuff in TNA that's just as bad as some of the stuff that went on in WCW, but I think I hated WCW more. Nah, that's too tough to
tough
call.
To say. I mean, we'll have to see what becomes of TNA. Yeah.
I do think we should every now and then go back to this time period in WCW because it was rather amusing. The show kicks off with Disco Inferno against Lash LaRue for the WCW Cruiserweight title. This was not one of the hot Cruiserweight matches to kick off a pay-per-view that WCW had previously showcased. There was a sign that said Lash Vegas from one of the fans.
All right.
They fight to the floor, and then they get back into the ring. LaRue hits a top rope Hurricane Rana. I was a big fan of Lash LaRue at the time. I thought he was going to fill the void that Chris Jericho had left when he left WCW. I could not have been more wrong.
Mm.
He really went nowhere. Once
what
WCW,
is he doing now? What's he up to these
I think
days?
He got completely out of the business. I think when WWE bought out WCW, he got sent down to Heartland Championship Wrestling, like with other talents, and he never got called up to the main roster, and I'm pretty sure he's out of the business now.
Mm. Okay.
Then Disco Inferno goes for his move, The Last Dance, which is the stunner, but is countered with a backbreaker. Then we see a pile driver by Disco Inferno for a two count. LaRue hits a short power bomb that Schiavone yells, "That's his move!" Inferno then hits The Last Dance, gets the clean win, and the announcers put him over. Then, after the match, Lash LaRue gets all of his heat back, where he puts Inferno on his shoulders, hits another short powerbomb, and then poses with the title.
Yeah, wasn't
I hate
Lash,
finishes like
wasn't
this.
Wasn't Lash the babyface going
Yeah, he was the babyface, so and his, I don't know what Disco was.
This was his heel turn. This was Lash LaRue's big heel turn, which the camera misses completely.
And he never went heel after this match. This was just a heel angle. So dumb. I hate when you do matches where a guy wins and then the other guy just gets all of his heat back. Like, what was the point of the match if you're just going to do this stupid 50-50 booking?
No, the point is to put over the fact that he's a whiny, sore loser.
But that wasn't the storyline he was in at the time. He was a babyface before and after this match.
Okay. Well, who cares?
Then Dean Malenko and Chris Benoit show up. Malenko is carrying a Halliburton briefcase, and Perry Saturn comes out asking why they haven't answered their pages, which confirmed that, yes, we were watching this in 1999.
Oh, my God.
And they weren't answering their cell phones.
Creepy, creepy, creepy.
Very creepy that Chris Benoit was not receiving cell phone messages. Then they basically tell Saturn to screw off, and they're not with the Revolution, which was Saturn and Shane Douglas at this point, who were forming their group.
The Revolution, that's right. I just thought it was so funny trying to watch these serious wrestlers act so poorly. I mean, you think of Chris Benoit, Dean Malenko, Perry Saturn. None of them, to me, stand out as charismatic actors. And to see them play these lines, play these characters, walking into an arena backstage and delivering these lines was very funny to me.
It's so weird when you look back at like the Radicals and what happened to all of them. Like,
sure,
they're all in some way out of the industry, and Dean Malenko, I guess, is the one that has a job in wrestling.
You
now,
can say
as
that
an
about
agent.
Well, you can say that about so many.
Yeah, I know. There's tons. You can look at the Hart Foundation. Tons. Mike Tenay is then with Harlem Heat, who lost the tag titles this past Monday to Conan and Ray. I'm thinking. So you booked Ray to win the tag titles on Monday. He has a knee injury, and they've stripped them of the titles. Why did that title change occur?
Yeah.
Oh, how to book titles into the ground, folks.
Yeah, why did that occur? And let's see what happens tonight. Who gets the titles this time?
It's a three-way tag match. Brian Knobbs and Hugh Morris are the first family, accompanied by Jimmy Hart, and they're wearing these, like, orangutan masks or something.
They're wearing Halloween masks for Halloween. But why this pairing? Hugh Morris and Brian Knobbs. Brian Knobbs still wearing all this nasty boys.
Yeah,
gear, of course.
Really. This was all backdrop for Brian Knobs to take his mask off, and then Heenan shuddered at Knobs' real face like he was scared.
Yeah, Heenan said, I thought they were going to wear masks when they first
came out. So clever. Then we had Harlem Heat, and then we had Conan and Billy Kidman. Two referees assigned for this match, Way.
Good.
Bobby Heenan had a great line. That's what I like about the powers that be. Things change fast.
Sure.
Including their jobs with the company.
Uh-huh.
Kidman came out with a camcorder, which was the second evidence of this being 1999.
What?
Full-size, like, Panasonic camcorder.
Because right now everybody uses what?
Cell phones.
Yeah.
We
still have camcorders around.
Not so much. Like those flip cams you'll see. But no, who's going around with camcorders?
Well, if you want to make it obvious, if you want to make it
This is one with like the big eye. There was no thing that, there was no viewfinder. It was just a camcorder.
Right.
Knobs falls off of the apron trying to hit an axe handle that just looked horrible. We see tons of chair shots, tons of garbage can lid shots. This was our concussion match of the night. Booker goes after Jimmy Hart to the entrance ramp, which is by a gigantic pumpkin that's being shaken by these big hands.
Yeah, I thought it was actually pretty cool looking, this set. It was like a giant
gargoyle
with steam coming out of its nostrils.
The best example, folks, if you want to see what happened to WCW, go look at the set in 1999 for Halloween Havoc, and then go pull up a video from Halloween Havoc 2000 and look at the set. And that alone tells you what these guys did to this company in a year. That's all I can say. We see Knobs just murders Booker T with a garbage can shot.
He just tosses the can onto the back of Booker's head.
Just horrible. And so then, fucking careless.
And then Heenan remarks that Knobs is the master of the garbage can.
Well, that's a good way to describe his style. Harlem Heat then tosses Knobs through a coffin. Goes right through a coffin.
A styrofoam coffin on the set.
Then we see a press slam by Morris into the ring onto Kidman, who lands on a chair.
Oh.
Then they go backstage, which is always great for the live crowd, especially when you don't have a Titantron. So fans have
no way
of seeing this. Booker misses Knobs, and he knocks Stevie Ray through cardboard boxes, and this takes Stevie Ray out. The cardboard boxes.
Stack of cardboard boxes.
Then Hugh Morris is in the ring. We're going back and forth as I got an aneurysm, and Morris hits the No Laughing Matter, which is a moonsault onto Conan on top of a table, which ended up separating the shoulder of Conan, and he was taken to a hospital. Backstage, Harlem Heat attacks Knobs with a mummy, and they pin him.
A mummy.
Like, not their mother. But an actual mummy that is in, like, white bandages.
Booker just finds this, I guess, like, paper mache mummy that's, like...
Just hanging around.
7-foot paper mache mummy. And he slams this onto Brian Knobs. And he wins. He gets the pinfall with a giant paper mache mummy.
I was waiting for a who's your mummy yell from Booker or Stevie. They walk back. I was wondering why there was no pop for the finish, and that's when I realized there's no Titantron, and they didn't see the finish. So they walk back, and all of a sudden, Kidman pins Morris. Now, the last time we were in the ring, Morris had just hit a moonsault onto Conan. Now Kidman was pinning Morris.
Which the camera doesn't catch, by the way.
Yeah.
You only hear the bell ring as Harlem Heat walks back down the ramp. So nobody has any idea what's going on.
Great job, Craig Leathers, on this match. So the fans are so confused. They just saw Kidman get the pin and thought he won. Then they play the confused role where one ref sides with Harlem Heat, the other with Kidman. And then they just announced, well, Harlem Heat got the pin earlier.
Oh.
They show Conan on the floor and acknowledging he has a shoulder injury. And Heenan, in his ever so caring tone, states, well, you know what they do to horses.
What?
This match sucked.
Oh, my God. Well, this is the type of match
could you possibly care?
No, you could sit down. If you haven't watched wrestling in a long time and, you know, maybe you're just a disenchanted fan, you sat down and suddenly for some reason decided to put this show on or just caught the show on TV, you would watch this match and then you would just think, man, wrestling is so dumb. No wonder I don't watch anymore. It's stupid things like this that just are there for no reason. They just didn't have to have this match at all.
No.
Harlem Heat won back the titles that they lost on Monday after Rey Mysterio and Conan were stripped. Oh.
Dumb. Ric Flair and David Flair show up at the building with Flair holding a crowbar and acting angry. Then Diamond Dallas Page and Kimberly come out, and Shivani notes, it's not on my format for them to be coming out right now for an interview.
Mm-hmm.
Kimberly comes in the ring and cuts a promo and says, 14 times. It's not the amount of times he won that stupid belt, but the number of times that Flair slapped her ass. This alluding to an angle on Monday where she went to a hotel room to drug David Flair, but Rick showed up. And says that when she's with DDP, a 14-time spanking is just a warm-up. Then DDP cuts a promo about Ric Flair masturbating and uses the strap for a euphemism for his penis.
I don't think that was intentional, though. DDP suggests a leather strap match, and to put it, he just says, let's whack it, let's jack it all night long. I want you to take the strap, and I want you to whack it all night long, because you can bet your ass I'm going to be whacking you.
This was way too homoerotic
for
a strap match build-up.
I don't think he was meaning for that to sound. I think
he started off saying, you like to whack it, Rick.
Yeah.
Or you like to spank it.
Yeah, I think he just sees whack as another word for spank.
This was the guy whose catchphrase was, feel the bang. I'm going to bang you.
He doesn't understand. He's
too old.
You like to spank it, don't you, Nature Boy? Of course you do. Well, DDP's got you spanked right here. You want to spank it, Nature Boy? Let's whack it. Let's jack it all night long. Strap match. Me and you. You want the truth, Nature Boy? You can't handle the truth. The truth is, I want you to take this strap if you get the shot, and I want you to whack it all night long.
Mike Tenay's backstage with Eddie Guerrero, Billy Kidman, and Torrie Wilson, part of the Filthy Animals, and states that both the Filthy Animals and Revolution are banned from ringside tonight, and Conan's on the way to the hospital with Ray. Tenay then insinuates that Eddie stole the watch he had on his wrist from Ric Flair. And Eddie gets upset that he's insinuating he's a thief.
Mm-hmm. Well, Eddie's not wearing a shirt. He's not wearing a shirt at all. He just has this watch on.
You wouldn't want to allude to Eddie Guerrero here. Basically, his role here is that he's a Mexican thief in a group called the Filthy Animals.
Yeah.
Very, very politically correct storyline here.
Well, all immigrants steal.
That's what I would learn from watching this pay-per-view. Up next, it's Perry Saturn and Eddie Guerrero. Yes, we just saw a promo from Eddie cutting a promo on Ric Flair, and Ric Flair showing up upset at Eddie. But we have Eddie against Perry Saturn.
Okay.
That's the match.
Mm-hmm.
We at the beginning of the tag match, we had Billy Kidman come to Heenan and give him a camcorder. This match starts the exact same way with Eddie leaving a watch for Bobby Heenan to watch.
Yes.
That was a mouthful. Mm-hmm. I don't know who was the heel and who was the babyface in this match. I think both were heels.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I thought even with Eddie, he was in bad shape at this time. He had come back way too early from that car wreck, and it was very well documented. He was on a lot of painkillers, a lot of drugs at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Still a very, very fluid performer.
Yeah, absolutely.
And this was a low point, I think, for him in terms of his personal life. Lots of submission work by Perry Saturn. I was kind of impressed with this.
Yeah.
Crowd was dead, even though this was the best match thus far on the card.
Heenan says, they're humans. They don't bend like that. And then Shivani says, absolutely, they're humans, not mutants.
What an idiot. We see a giant T-bone suplex. Guerrero just starts working as the heel in this match, and Saturn, by default, becomes the babyface. The crowd comes alive after a fallaway slam, and then Saturn hits a quebrada for a two count, then hits another, which Guerrero gets his knees up for. Eddie makes his comeback and misses a frog splash. Then Guerrero countered a top rope razor's edge and hits a back suplex off the top. And then Ric Flair runs in with a crowbar to attack Eddie, and this match ends in a disqualification. Kidman and Torrey then run into the ring. Kidman's hit by the crowbar. Flair teases hitting Torrey with the crowbar. It's a nice domestic violence tease. And then he makes out with Torrey, who insinuates that she liked it. And Flair takes his watch back from Bobby Heenan.
Girls love it. They love it when you threaten them with a crowbar and instead make out with them.
Yeah, against their will. Great. So we go backstage, and all of a sudden, Bill Goldberg is on top of Sid. So this contract was clearly violated, Way.
This might, I mean, maybe talking back, just like recounting all these events quickly, doesn't seem like such a chore. But I found this show so boring to watch. By this point, it was like an hour in or something, and I was just, it was like, it did not feel like an hour. It felt like an eternity of my life just being wasted on these stupid, stupid, meaningless events.
I'll give you my thoughts at the end of this pay-per-view in terms of that, but believe me, I concur. Sid gets up, and he's bleeding from the forehead. So Bill Goldberg has basically beat the shit out of Sid. Then Buff Bagwell comes out, not to wrestle, because this is a pay-per-view, and he is my early candidate for the Scott Putski Award. Just looks insane in this shirt. And he cuts a promo on, quote, the two sheriffs from up north who are going to save WCW, which is awesome, everybody. WCW is in the toilet. That's the message here. And acknowledging that we have writers. Bagwell then says that having stroke is not being booked on the pay-per-view and just making it happen. Then Jeff Jarrett runs out with a guitar and they fight on the floor. Jarrett also looking fairly jacked here, especially when you compare him to what he looks like today. And this was interesting. Jarrett had worked the WWF pay-per-view 7 days earlier and then showed up the next night on Nitro because his contract was up and there was no 90-day no-compete clause.
Right.
Bagwell has an airbrushed picture of himself on the back of his shirt.
Mm-hmm.
What a dork. Then Lex Luger runs out and...
If you didn't think this segment could get any better.
Lex Luger runs out, who's now only being called the Total Package. He runs out and almost fucked up a run-in. How did he do this?
He's instructed to come out. Okay, go on.
He is running from the side, and like his leg goes into the barricade as he's running by and almost knocks into the fans. I rewound like 8,000 times.
He has one simple task here.
Run down the aisle.
Run down the aisle, grab a guitar, and smash it over the head of the person you're supposed to smash it over. And what happens, John?
He failed on so many levels. He ran into the barricade, got into the ring, took the guitar. He goes to swing the guitar at Jarrett, who gets out of the way, and Luger, the fucking...
The neck of the guitar. He hits Bagwell with the neck of a guitar.
The entire portion of the guitar misses Bagwell, and he hits him with the neck of the guitar and probably knocked Bagwell out cold. This is the most uncoordinated individual I've ever seen in my life.
Of course, the guitar doesn't break, so what does he do? Smashes it on the top turnbuckle anyway when he realizes he missed.
Oh man. Lex Luger, just looking ridiculous, by the way, too.
So,
he officially got the Scott Putski Award here.
Okay. So
the segment was great. Mike Tenay is in the trainer's room where Sid's being stitched up. He gets up and yells, "Let it bleed! Let it bleed!" Then we see Guerrero lying on the steps on his cell phone, calling Mysterio, telling him to get his ass back here. They have filthy animal business.
Yeah. He's on the steps inside the arena.
Now, Wade, you watched this online, correct?
Yes.
Because my tape fucked up here because I guess an edition of WCW Saturday Night got dubbed in here because the next match was Brad Armstrong against Berlin. Like the country, but spelt with a Y.
Berlin.
Who is Berlin.
Formerly Alex Wright.
Formerly Das Wunderkind is now Berlin. But this was during the late 90s, everybody, where all I's were replaced with Y's, such as China, Asia... and Berlin.
And everybody's concern was on the Cold War.
Berlin.
10 years earlier.
Berlin came out and they were like, coming down the ring, accompanied by his bodyguard, Berlin. Mm-hmm. We don't have a name for this man. He's just the bodyguard, like the movie. Berlin's music is like that opera music that they'll use for The Undertaker sometimes, but a higher pitched version of it and a faster version.
Okay.
Berlin's gimmick basically is that he just hates. That's what they said. He just hates, including Americans.
Yes, and Heenan and Schiavone begin arguing. Schiavone suggests, well, does that mean that he hates you too, Bobby, because you're American? And so they go on forever just arguing about whether or not they actually hate Heenan because Heenan says he's smarter than most Americans or something. But they just go on forever. I got the feeling that these Schiavone and Heenan, they're probably given so little instruction that they couldn't take any of this seriously. And I didn't get the sense that they took any of this seriously. When you listen to Jim Ross, no matter what he's commentating, there's a tone of seriousness about the guy. But here, it just felt like the two of them were being forced to go out there and play.
Well, it's okay for this stuff. At least they were really on the ball and understood what was happening in the main event.
Oh, yeah.
So,
for sure.
This match was just... Berlin attempts a reverse neck breaker after all of this offense onto Armstrong, and then Armstrong just counters it and pins him.
No, he doesn't counter it. Okay, so Berlin goes for his finisher, I guess, which is the neckbreaker, but Armstrong holds onto the ropes.
So Berlin takes a back bump.
Back bump, and Armstrong simply covers him.
Bump, everybody. So the equivalent of punching a guy and him falling could have been the finish here, because Berlin's
not even, because when you're punching a guy, he takes damage to the face. This would be
this was even lighter. This was just a simple back bump.
This would be the equivalent of a man tripping, slipping on the floor, and then you'd pin him afterwards. Maybe he hit his head. Maybe he had a concussion.
So they did a real clever post-match beatdown where Berlin just beat the shit out of Brad Armstrong and they raised Berlin's hand.
Why?
Dude, this is the same argument I had after the Disco Lash LaRue match. What was the point?
Yeah, there's no
You're pushing Berlin, and Brad Armstrong was an enhancement talent at this point. He was barely on television, if ever. Mike Tenay is with Ric Flair, who cuts a promo on the Filthy Animals.
Like, I just feel so robbed of my time that they would include to put this meaningless match in here, and I had to sit through it to kind of dissect some semblance of meaning out of Brad Armstrong versus Berlin.
Mike Tenay is with Ric Flair. He cuts a promo on the Filthy Animals, who are not facing him on the pay-per-view tonight. And then Tenay has to bring up the fact that he has a strap match tonight with DDP. And then Flair just talks about spanking Kimberly.
He went nuts here, Flair.
Yeah.
He's pretty awesome, actually.
Chris Benoit defending the television title against Rick Steiner. Schiavone notes, this has all the ear markings to be one great match. I don't know about that. Steiner had like one of those flavor savers that he dyed blonde on his beard. He looked completely ridiculous for like
flavor saver. What's
that's
that?
That's like what you have right under the chin if you have the hair right there.
Okay.
Flavor saver.
That's what you call them? I thought they were soul patches.
Soul patch.
Yeah. I'd always heard soul patch.
I've heard both. Benoit hits the absolute safest suicide dive I've ever seen in his career, where he lands on his feet on the floor. Steiner just plays bully heel throughout this match. Heenan says, if you think this is a great match, wait until Goldberg and Sid get out here.
Yeah.
Benoit makes a big babyface comeback with a shoulder block, then hits the consecutive German suplexes leading to a two count. But then there's a referee bump as Steiner shoves the referee into Benoit. That was not cause for disqualification. Steiner then gets a chair, but Benoit counters with a T-bone suplex, throws the chair into the hands of Rick Steiner, and delivers a palm thrust to the chair, which goes into the face of Rick Steiner. Then Benoit goes for the swan dive, but Steiner throws the chair into the face of Benoit. Then both men are laying down, and Dean Malenko runs out. He grabs the chair. And he's looking in the direction of Rick Steiner, and guess what he does, Way? He turns his hips and hits Chris Benoit with the chair. Vince Russo has arrived, everybody.
I can't believe this. He hit his friend. They're supposed to be friends.
Malenko throws the referee into the ring. Steiner gets the win and the title. And Heenan concludes that this was a conspiracy and a plan, and that Benoit got jobbed. Those are the exact words he uses.
Oh.
Awesome. Mike Tenay backstage with Bret Hart discussing the baseball bat attack by Luger on Nitro this past Monday that prevented him from winning the WCW title from Sting. Bret was fine during this promo.
Yeah, it was like the old Bret Hart.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that leads
he had, by the way, he had just come back, didn't he? Like, earlier, they had that match at Kemper Arena.
Yeah, so he had only been back a few weeks here heading into this pay-per-view.
And they were priming him up for a world title run.
Yep.
Keep that in mind.
Yep. 1 month later, he would be WCW champion. We get the total package out with Elizabeth taking on Bret Hart. Hart is on offense for the entire match, despite being the babyface, and goes into his finishing sequence almost right away with the elbow off the second rope, goes for a sharpshooter attempt. Then he runs into Luger, and both go over the top rope to the floor, which was right out of the Rumble from 94 when both won.
That's right.
The exact same spot. Hart's then selling his leg landing on the floor, stemming from the bat attack on Monday, which at least made sense. Luger then works over the left leg, applies a half crab onto the left leg, and gets the win. Clean.
Lex Luger submits Bret the Hitman Hart using a half Boston crab.
Very odd booking here.
Great. Great stuff. I mean, okay, it does make sense, yes, with the attack from the bat coming off on Monday. But why did you have to do this? Why?
I don't know.
If you're trying to build up Bret the Hitman Hart for a world title run.
I don't know why. I don't know. Tenay is backstage, and he asks Goldberg if his attack was the smartest move. And Goldberg points to the blood on the floor and says, "That's what he does. He kicks men's asses." And walks off. Then Medusa comes out way for a horrible segment. She's wearing a bikini, and her hair is dyed like every color imaginable. She just looks atrocious. And she's carrying the new Monday Nitro cologne.
Yeah.
God, I wish I had bought this when it existed.
Did this actually exist?
I think so.
You sure?
Well, they didn't allude to it being a joke.
Yeah. Well, the fact that
I'm almost positive this was a legitimate item. Because the WWE had a cologne at the time, too.
And you're telling me they did this with their own product?
This is what they did. Heenan said that the stuff stinks. It's horrible. It's brutal. And he buries the product.
Yeah. Which leads me to think that this was not a real item. That this was just something that they invented.
That tells me that this product, they had to push this product. And this is how Russo and Ferrara decided to push this product that they were given and had to have some integration into the program to promote. I will, folks, look up this week if you can verify if there was a legitimate Monday Nitro cologne released. Mm-hmm. Please let us know. Medusa cuts a promo on having to model this product and says, "You can tell those two higher echelons from New York that it's bullshit and she has to do this," and pours the cologne on Heenan. And Schiavone says, "You stink."
Cutting edge TV.
This could not wait for Nitro the next night. We get a video for Sting versus Hulk Hogan discussing who you could trust, and Sting ended up turning heel. I felt like TNA had just overtaken my program here. Hogan said at Halloween Havoc he would get the last laugh. That's how the video ended. So up next, it's Sting against Hulk Hogan for the WCW title. We get a long delay with Hogan not coming out to his entrance music. Fans are just marking out for the camera, not assuming anything is odd that this music has been playing for 5 minutes. Then they go to Sting's music, and he comes out. Finally, Hogan comes out in street clothes, and he starts talking to Sting that this isn't part of the show. And then he lies down in the middle of the ring, and Sting pins Hogan right away to keep the title, and they immediately cut to a Bill Goldberg, Sid Vicious video, and then come back with fans booing vociferously in the building.
Even if you're not a fan of either of these two, or the pairing of these two, they are arguably two of the biggest stars in professional wrestling.
This was the main event of your pay-per-view.
And to get to see the two of them advertised on a show that you're physically attending, paying money to see, you would at least hope for some semblance of a match, whether it be good or bad.
These idiots, on January the 4th, and we've reviewed this Nitro, where Nash lay down for Hogan. So many people refer to that being the night that WCW was dead. And so many people, if you look at how many people they drew for that night at the Georgia Dome, they came back 6 months later with a fraction of the people. and they don't believe anything had to do with that finish. And yet they decide, let's do that again because it was so great the first time.
And they still do it.
They did it on Impact last week. This was so stupid.
This was even worse, though, because this
they would
is,
do this finish again before the Russo era was over.
This is even worse than TNA, just because this is the main event, you know, the women's match.
Of your pay-per-view that people bought.
Yeah.
This was incredibly horrible.
It was so compelling that immediately after the pinfall, they cut to the next promo. Without even...
Well, because this was a shoot way, and they didn't know what to do. Oh. They just had to get going.
They just switched it, played the tape right after this pinfall.
I hated WCW at this time. So we got Sid Vicious and Bill Goldberg for the United States title. Sid was the champion. I quit match. Goldberg makes his entrance, but Nash and Hall come from behind and attack him. And what was Kevin Nash wearing, Way?
Wasn't he wearing some sweatshirt?
He was wearing a hockey jersey.
Oh.
That said FUBU on it.
Oh. Well, because he's hip.
Yeah.
He's, what's his catchphrase?
Did he have a catchphrase?
No, it was Kevin Nash's catchphrase.
I'm taking the night off.
Well.
Sid is bloody right from the start of the match, stemming from the beatdown backstage. Goldberg just beat down Sid. And they were trying to get Sid over as a babyface in this match. The story that was that Goldberg would hit him with everything and Sid kept coming back. Sid's offense looked terrible when he wasn't selling.
I guess we reviewed a match last week where Sid was being pushed as a babyface too. I guess I'm just so surprised to hear that this guy had so many chances to be pushed as a top babyface.
He got chance after chance because of his size. Goldberg is punching Sid while Sid is on his knees, and Mickey J just calls for the end of the match, and Goldberg wins the U.S. title. For these two, I think this was the best match you could possibly have. The blood was absolutely necessary, I think.
There was so much blood.
Sid was bleeding buckets.
Yeah.
Like, an incredible amount.
Yeah.
Rick Steiner came out to help Sid, as Sid still calls out Goldberg to fight, and they put Sid over as a superhuman for surviving this. This was, like, right out of... Like, you could tell the fingerprints of Russo and company that they were just going to redo the Bret Hart-Steve Austin match here. With
Sid and Bill
Goldberg.
Yeah,
Sid 316, everybody, was invented tonight. I'm surprised they didn't let him cut a promo.
And Rick Steiner. No. Rick Steiner comes out afterwards.
Well, he was the shooter. He was Ken Shamrock.
What? Yes, that's right, yes. And I guess Rick Steiner is a friend of Sid, so is Rick Steiner a babyface too?
He played a heel against Benoit.
Okay, well, here he was siding on the...
He was being the real Rick Steiner here. You got to decipher the real and the fake. This was Rick Rex Steiner.
That's right. He wasn't following the format. He came out to check up on his...
This isn't on my format.
Oh, yeah. So he's going out there, and I thought for sure this guy was going to deck Sid. He was going to turn on his friend Sid. But to give him credit...
What a singles match that would be.
To give him credit, they did not do that. They simply had Rick Steiner carry Sid out. And then Heenan says, they're going to talk about this one for a long, long time.
They're not.
Shivani tops him by saying, this is a turning point in the career of Sid Vicious.
It was not. Then we go to a video of Kimberly in the hotel room when Ric Flair showed up on Nitro. This was, I don't know if they had to edit this or they couldn't air certain shit, because Ric Flair comes into the room, jumps into the bed, and then they just cut.
They
couldn't show the spanking, I guess.
I fast-forwarded to that.
Sting comes out for a promo on the pay-per-view and says he didn't come to Las Vegas for a night off, and he's challenging anyone to a match for the title later tonight. And that leads us to our match second from the top, Diamond Dallas Page and Ric Flair in a strap match. Charles Robinson is the official for this match, and the rules are that the match ends in a pinfall or submission. They fight down the entrance and into the crowd. Paige is playing babyface in the crowd, giving diamond cutter signs. Like, do people not know how to play babyface and heel in this promotion? I think it's a huge problem on this show. No one knew what the fuck they were.
Sure.
DDP cuts a heel promo, and then he's doing his babyface shit in this match.
Yeah.
Flair comes back to the ringside area, and he just goes up to Kimberly and makes out with her twice against her will. This was like assault.
But he can get away with it because he's old.
This was two women he made out with tonight on the pay-per-view.
But they like it. That's why he can get away with it, because they like it.
Flair is thrown into the barricade and is stomped on and drew blood. And a funny story here was Russo did an interview after this stating that Ric Flair went into business for himself during this match and bladed.
Sure.
And it resulted in standards and practices putting a moratorium on blood.
Are you, hold on a second, are you telling me they got angry at this even after that last Sid match?
They're saying that they were allowed to do blood on the pay-per-view for one match.
Okay.
And then Flair, and it was the Sid match.
Yeah.
Because, and I would agree with them. For that, for to tell the story they were trying in that match, I thought the blood really helped for Sid.
Mm-hmm.
There was no reason Flair had to do blood
absolutely
in this match.
Absolutely none, especially following the, immediately following
yeah,
the last match.
This was not booked for Flair to do blood. Providing so, Russo wasn't lying in this interview. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt.
I guess it just wouldn't make sense to me why they would punish the entire company by not allowing blood when it was really only Flair that was at fault here. Because it's not like they had a problem with blood. They don't have a problem with blood.
It has to be used in... It has to be in a certain... I don't know. I don't know how standards and practices approved stuff, but it was always a something that Russo complained about. To me, he used it as a crutch of not being allowed to do stuff in WCW because of standards and practices, and I think he overlooked a lot of other stuff that he was failing at. Anyway, so that was the deal with Flair's blood. They fight onto the announce table. Flair worked on the left leg of Page, applied the figure four with the strap around DDP, who's selling that he's being choked, but you could see so much like lag room for the strap that it just looks so silly that he was pretending to be choked here. Then DDP chokes Flair, hits the diamond cutter. Charles Robinson counts one, two, then hesitates, and then hits three, totally fucks up the finish, and DDP, in what I guarantee was not scripted, gives a diamond cutter to Robinson, as DDP looked pissed here that the finish was fucked up.
Yeah,
and the announcers are trying to cover that Robinson was maybe trying to help Ric Flair because they were in a faction together earlier
which
in the year.
Nobody remembers by this point. They had
probably
pretty
not.
Much reset. But,
this was horrible.
But I don't even think he counted the third count. He just like he went one, two, and he put his hand down.
Ugh.
Everybody was confused. Shivani can't explain it. I guess if like, I mean if maybe perhaps this is the job of the announcer when something like this happens, you just kind of you know what the storyline's supposed to be in your script, so you should do your best to explain it to the audience. But
now,
I guess they didn't know.
As I mentioned, I had the VHS from when this originally aired on pay-per-view, and let's just say the. My VHS, I guess, has taken a beating because starting from this point all the way until the end, it was like I was watching flash frames because it would go black every other second.
Oh, yeah.
For the last 40 minutes. Like, dude, it was just brutal. Like, I had to just listen to
most of
the show.
What are you going
to
do when you want to rewatch this main event?
This is the last time I think I'll ever watch this show in my lifetime. David Flair comes out, but Kimberly low blows him. And then, that sounds dirty. And then DDP takes the crowbar and hits Rick right in the balls. David takes the worst diamond cutter in history.
Oh, my God.
As Page has taken out both Flairs and Charles Robinson. Ric Flair does a stretcher job as David is crying. And Robinson has a look of fear on his face, like DDP is going to have him fired after this match. Shivani states it feels inappropriate to promo something coming up. And Heenan announces he's going to go to the hospital after the show to check on Rick. Then the Filthy Animals are in the ambulance, come out of the ambulance to attack Ric Flair. At this point, I thought this must be Steve Austin tribute night. Is that all these people have ever seen? Are angles to get Austin over and we're just going to use them all on this show?
Yeah.
Like, that's a famous angle with Austin
well,
in the ambulance.
You have an ambulance. What are you going to do with it? Of course you're going to have the...
An ambulance.
Yeah, of course you're going to have someone hijack it.
They attack Flair. They put him in the ambulance.
They did a monster truck angle with Bret Hart after this, too. They had Bret Hart run over some guy in a monster truck. Bret Hart.
Yes. As they drive off with Flair in the ambulance, Heenan just notes, will we ever see Flair again?
No one in the audience buys any of this for a second. No reaction whatsoever from the crowd. No one gives a fuck. They had just seen the entire Attitude Era packed into one evening.
Yeah, that's really true. And for those who were not watching WCW at the time, this all led to the next night on Nitro. They showed highlights. A camera just magically followed this ambulance. Actually, they might have actually done it logically where they used footage from Billy Kidman's camcorder. Yeah, I'll give them that. I can't 100% confirm that, but that would make sense to me. And they took Ric Flair out to a desert and buried him.
Yeah.
And that's how they wrote him off television. And then he showed up and never got revenge. So that leads us to our main event way. Are you ready for this? This was 8 hours into the show. Sting comes out and Bill Goldberg answers the challenge way. It's WCW champion versus U.S. champion. Schiavone was very confused at the start of the match, stating this is a non-title match, even though Sting had done a promo saying it was a title match.
That's right. No title is on the line.
They fight onto the floor.
Schiavone even says, I'm sure the reason why this isn't a title match is because WCW has to sign and agree to all matches. And then he even says, there must be money involved too, so that's why this is not a title match. Just to appease the audience.
Well, Lorenzo Fertitta of the Nevada State Athletic Commission did not approve of this match, as you
remember. Oh, because he was
Remember,
working.
This
yeah,
is in Las Vegas.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
So Sting hits a splash off of the top.
Oh, no, not Lorenzo Fertitta.
Yeah, remember. Oh, sorry, it was Glenn Carano. But it was. Remember last year when we reviewed it? It was Lorenzo Fertitta and Glenn Carano.
Oh, okay.
They were both on the Nevada State Athletic Commission at this time. Sting hits a splash off the top rope, but Goldberg gets back up and goes for a spear, but hits the post. This allows Sting to hit a splash in the corner, hits a second one, but Goldberg then makes a comeback with a spear and a jackhammer for the win in like 3 minutes.
It was just an awful, messy match. It was
squash match.
It was as if they were told 5 minutes before this bout that they were going to go out there and do this.
Yeah. Charles Robinson, who was just fucked up the last match, hands the title to Goldberg, and the announcer calls Goldberg the new champion. Schiavone, as your credible play-by-play man, says, I guess he's the world champion. Sting argues with Robinson after the match and gives him the Scorpion Death Drop, and they end the pay-per-view with a promo to send in your cable bill to get a free yo-yo.
That was the topper. That was the topper. The very end of the pay-per-view. You can get a free spooky WCW yo-yo, which is not even worth the plastic it's made on, much less the $2.99 shipping and handling that you're supposed to send with your cable
and
bill.
Could you come up with a better object to be a metaphor for this company at this time?
End your show. Get a free yo-yo. Fuck. Oh, my God.
I don't
care. This is so bad.
This was, to me, if you had spent $30 on this show, you would be so upset after this show. And I give this show a 0 out of 10. Because this showed such a lack of respect for your audience.
Fuck.
Not only did you fuck them on the main event that was advertised, but at the title change at the end, the next night, the title was declared vacant. So you got the dusty finish there. This was such an insult. There were so many angles on this show, I couldn't remember half of them by the end of this show. Russo and Ferrara, this was it for them. Everyone thought these guys were going to turn WCW around. After their first pay-per-view, there was no hope for this company. I hated this show, Way. I hated it. So overbooked and just no respect for your pay-per-view audience at all.
Perhaps it was... I'm just trying to envision what it was like backstage for these two. Because, you know, this is really what there's third time. They did Nitro. Did they do Thunder that week?
Yes.
So this is really their third time backstage doing this show.
Can you imagine? Nitros were 3 hours each week at this time.
I could not
imagine sitting through these.
I don't even want to think about that.
And I did at the time. Oh.
Anyway, one of the worst experiences watching wrestling that I've ever had. Perhaps it was just because I was tired. Perhaps it was because I actually sat down and watched this entire show in one sitting. But just a terrible, terrible thing that I had to endure that made me really dislike professional wrestling. I hope you had fun. I hope you guys had fun listening to us.
Well, if you haven't had fun, we thought what would be better than us reviewing this than chatting with one of the creative members of WCW at this time period. Some of you might remember the name Bob Mould, who was part of the group Husker Du.
That's right.
And a month before this, he was brought into the creative team for WCW, and he was still part of the process here when Russo and Ferrara came in. And we had him on the law about 2 years ago. And here's a brief clip of that interview that Dan Lavransky conducted with Bob discussing Russo and Ferrar coming into the company and all of the chaos in trying to put together Nitro every week, all of the egos involved, all of the politics, and it'll give you a sense of how crazy this was backstage, which was clearly reflected in the on-screen product.
So when they did call you, Bob, what did you, was it like a, was it something you wanted? Like, I wouldn't know how to react if I got a call like that.
Well, in early 99, you know, I pulled myself off the road. I'd been touring nonstop for 20 years and really wanted to take a break from touring. So, you know, makes perfect sense to go on the road with wrestling, right? you know, Gary gave me a call. I was on the phone with Gary and JJ. And Bill Bush, and it was right at the time when I think, you know, Eric Bischoff was having, you know, I think personal situations, let's put it that way.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there was a change coming, and, you know, when that meltdown was final, they said, do you want to come in and help on creative?
So,
and I said, sure.
Right. Now, what was, and so, and it was like, it was about, wasn't it like about a month later that Russo and Ed Ferrar were hired? Wasn't that October 99?
Yeah, I came in like the second week in September. I think it was right on, it would have been on Fall Brawl, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And sat out in the truck with Bill Bush and just watched the show match by match. And he was just listening. He was like, what is this? What's going on? What do you think of this? Who's... You know, and I remember one of the matches that night was Sid and Chris Benoit, and I would say, you know, and I remember pointing to Bill and saying, you know, this is the guy right here. This is the most talented person you've got in the company.
Mm. And you don't mean Sid?
No, Sid was good, but you know. But you know, so I think, you know, when I came in, I my agenda for whatever it was worth was. The hard workers, the guys who gave you the good minutes in the middle, in, you know, Chris and Dean and Eddie and Perry.
Right. Sure.
And, you know, all the, you know, the guys that Sullivan brought in originally from ECW.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was where I was coming from, and, you know, and got into the first booking meeting and, you know, realized, oh boy, okay, this is a mess.
Right. So right from the very first go, eh? Right out of the gate, it's a mess.
Well, there was a dynamic in place when I walked in. You know, I was the new guy, so I tried to keep my head down. And the first booking meeting, if I go around the room, it was Dusty, Mike Graham, Kevin Sullivan, Kevin Nash, and then the production people, you know, Craig Leathers and Andy Yother. And the war at the time was between production and creative. You know, who there was like this jockeying for power, I think, as Eric was going down, you know, where I think the production people wanted to take charge, and then there was, you know, the agents and the bookers who wanted to keep control of it, and they were sort of looking at me like, okay, Bill Bush brought you in, which side are you on?
Wow.
Like,
So yeah, you instantly get dumped into a war. Now, how overall was kind of like morale at this time too? It must have been pretty tough because WWE had gotten back in control in the ratings and that, and like you said, Bischoff was gone all of a sudden. Bill Bush was in. What was morale like at that point?
Nobody knew who was in charge. You know, I mean, Nash was booking, so, I mean, he was still sort of in charge of the locker room. And, you know, and Sullivan and Graham and Dusty were, you know, filling things out. You know, they were the agents, and I mean, who else was there? I guess Terry Taylor was there.
Right.
Or was Terry not back yet? I can't remember if he came back with, I think Russo brought him back. The morale was sort of weird. I mean, you know, Hogan had his camp, Sting had his camp, there was the whole Nash Hall, etc. I mean, there was, you know, it was like, people have seen that show Oz, right, on HBO?
Yeah.
That's sort of what it was like.
Wow.
Every day.
that
without the knives.
Yeah, that is,
or at least, you know,
that is insane. How did an average, like, when you guys would have to sit down to come up with ideas, how did things work? Did you guys all throw out ideas, or was it mainly just like, how did a writing session work?
Well, I mean, you know, it was at that point, I think, Kev's, Nash's thing was just sort of like, let's just get some matches up and running. Let's try to do some things. I mean, the first week I came in was off of the Sting Hogan deal where Sting was supposed to turn heel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first day in, I'm trying to come up, I'm trying to give them ideas to send Sting and Luger out as heels to get tons of heat and send Hogan out, and they surround Hogan, and Bret Hart comes out and walks around the ring and implies that he's going to help Hogan, and you don't know. And then, go to some kind of thing at the end, we could at least get something up and going for the next pay-per-view. Nobody wanted to hear it. Nobody wanted to do anything. Sting came out and baby-faced himself right off the bat on the show because nobody told him what to do. Hogan had, I met with Hogan that day, and he listened to what I had to say and then just walked out of the room. It was like, okay.
Unbelievable.
I was just like, well, I'm just going to sit here and see what I can do. And at that point, I basically realized where my best services were, where I could best offer my services, and it's where I ended up when Russo came in, which was at go position.
Okay, right.
When those guys came in, Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara sort of, surveyed the landscape, and, Russo decided to keep me in creative, and he wanted me at go position. So I became the go-between, to Craig Leathers in the truck, and Craig and I worked together great because we were both, detail guys. But also, I had to feed the announcers' lines, and I was dealing with the refs on the wireless.
Wow.
Giving everybody go-homes from the back. So I'm sort of learning this by the seat of my pants.
Wow, so you were kind of like the air traffic controller backstage there, kind of coordinating things.
I was doing what Vince McMahon does on his show.
Right. He's screaming in the announcer's ears. Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, sell the pay-per-view. Oh, my God, look what he hit him with, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And having to go, Mickey, give him the go home, get more color, whatever, doing all that shit on the fly, too.
Wow.
And having the agents yelling at me and Russo yelling at me, and, I'm just sort of sitting there calm as I can be, trying to make sure that we hit all our TV marks and get segment six going 30 seconds before Vince comes on the air. And, it was nuts, but I thought it was sort of cool.
Yeah, I obviously very, very stressful, obviously. But yeah, obviously a certain amount of exhilaration to go along with it. But I'm guessing that it would be something that it would I imagine it would burn you out quickly if it was this intense every week.
When as the months went by, I got much better at handling it, and I think after a couple weeks, it actually got pretty easy. I mean, not easy like I can put my feet up during this match.
Right.
But, when we got to segment 137 and I realized that 126 and 129 didn't make any sense, I could go, Craig, I think we need to pull that one because we just lost continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd look at Russo and go, can we pull this? And he'd be like, yeah. And so, and then that's when it started to get sort of easy.
Mm-hmm.
But, the problems came in when, when Russo wanted to get rid of a lot of the people that were helping on creative. And he started to go head-to-head with everybody, especially with JJ. And I was like, he thought everybody was out to get him. Vince Russo sort of, there was one big meeting where Bill Bush called everybody in and said, okay, we need to air this thing out. And everybody, Nash was there, Sullivan was there, JJ was there, I was there. Everybody just said what they had to say. And Vince Russo was like, how can you guys do this to me? And we're all like, do what? Suggest clean finishes and not and not doing two tag matches back-to-back and, fucking over Inoki by, hitting this junior champ with a tequila bottle.
Oh, I hated that with Liger. Yeah, I hated that.
Yeah, it was just sort of the details that make pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And it was sort of like, do we have to have a run-in every night? Do we have to send out the NWO five times every show? Can we just try to pull it back a little bit?
And that was Bob Mould, everyone, chatting with Dan the Mouth Lavransky. That whole interview is like 45 minutes, and it's available in the download section of the website. And I will put the link in the update on Monday if you guys would like to download that and check that out. Bob Mould's a very interesting individual. Mm-hmm. He had a whole career before and just followed wrestling.
Yeah.
And then was brought into the creative team and was involved there for about a year during one of the most interesting time periods in wrestling when WCW was just falling apart in 99 and 2000.
What a run these guys had.
Like, he's chatting about as far back as 2000, he was recommending, like, bringing CM Punk in 2000, really? Dude. Like, he was mentioning, like, low-key.
Thank God they didn't bring him in, because they would have fucked him up, like, for good. He would have been Lash LaRue.
But it just shows you how ahead of the curve, like, Bob Mould was at the time, of just guys he was following. And, you know, he was a big work rate freak. So, I mean, he was big on guys like Benoit and Malenko and, you know, guys like that that could really put together the solid matches, and just seemed completely the opposite of what WCW's creative force was putting forth here. A horrendous pay-per-view, eh? That was just terrible. Anyway, let's get into feedback here. Brian Hillhouse. Hogan versus Sting at Havoc 99. Hopefully you guys can explain what that crap was about. I'd Google it, but I'm busy being extremely lazy. No idea what it was about. It never led to anything. Hogan never appeared again. He came back in February of 2000 after Russo was removed for the first time, and then worked with Russo for a couple of months when Russo was brought back the second time. But they never went back to, like, a Hogan Sting program.
They didn't explain what happened.
No,
at
it was
this
just
pay-per-view.
It was a way to take. This was tonight. The Halloween Havoc show was designed to take Hogan off TV, to take Ric Flair off of TV, and bring them back when they wanted something. Russo just wanted to get rid of the old guys and take them off TV, essentially.
Andy Gordon. Hey, guys, I just listened to your review of Buried Alive. Holy shit, that pay-per-view was one of Mick Foley's best. Too bad that now we have to see Kane and Undertaker in that match. Put me in that hole so that I don't have to sit through this stupid storyline. Can't wait for WCW Halloween Havoc. Didn't Hogan lay down for Sting? Yes, he did.
Mark Cardoso. Just watched the best of the WWF Volume 12, featuring three matches with Kamala versus Ricky Steamboat, and Tito Santana and Hulk Hogan. If people crab about Cole and Lawler being horrible, wait till you hear Craig DeGeorge and Johnny V. I wonder who is more annoying, Todd Pettengill or Michael Cole? Pettengill, I think, by a landslide.
Pettengill.
I've never been that Michael Cole is not, you know, one of the great announcers, but I've never hated him to the degree everybody else has. Especially during his time with Taz, when Heyman was booking SmackDown, I thought he was very effective.
I think I find him entertaining. Whether or not he's good for business, doing what he's doing right now.
No, but it is entertaining.
But to someone like me who really just, he's an internet fan, and who pretty much agrees with all the heel things that he's saying.
By the way, did you watch Caitlyn against Maxine from NXT this week?
I did not.
I haven't seen it yet, but it's been said it's like Jenna Maraska's Charmel level.
Is it one of those landmark matches?
Like,
that we have to see?
Apparently. We should watch this.
Absolutely.
It's only like 3 minutes, so.
I'll watch the whole show. I like that show.
I have not watched it since it's gone to the internet, but I should watch because it is still on TV up here in Canada.
It's great. Ahmad Buttons. Hey, guys. I hope you guys have dug my Photoshop pics. Yes, we have.
All the Photoshop pics, guys. You guys do a great job with them. They're excellent.
They're creepy. They're very creepy, though.
On the Halloween Havoc one, is it Sting in the white? There's someone's face in the white.
Yeah, there's somebody
else. Who is that?
I don't know.
I didn't know who that was.
Was it Jay or? I don't know.
Think so. Maybe someone could let us know. Who was that?
Well, the creator. Yes, please let us know.
Okay.
It's a wonder what boredom and alcohol can do. I should preface this review by mentioning that in 1999, my parents discontinued our cable TV service.
Thank them.
A decision that no doubt broke my 11-year-old heart. However, 11 years later, I can thank God they did, because I didn't have to witness this fucking shit. TNA is bad, but WCW 1999 makes TNA look like Mad Men.
No, it doesn't. Okay, let's be honest. As someone that watches Mad Men, that's an insult to Mad Men.
About Halloween Havoc 99, the ghost of Chris Benoit always seems to follow the both of you. Worst spot of the night had to be Benoit throwing the chair at Steiner, who catches it, but Benoit just slaps the chair into Rick's face. Not a Van Dominator, or even a punch, a fucking slap. Perry Saturn's hat is fabulous. Leave it to Russo to have Bret Hart tap out to Luger and Hogan lay down for Sting in the world title match all in the same night. Pay-per-views like this make me glad my parents were poor in the late 90s.
Oh, what a great comment. Yep. Darren Bennett, I know it's not really Raw, but ROH was awesome this week, especially the History of Tyler Black and Davey Richards segment. I watched ROH this week. It was a great show. Yeah. It was all built around Tyler Black's final ROH on HDNet match with Davey Richards. It wasn't at the level of the June show we saw, the Death Before Dishonor match, but a really, really good show. It was one match on the entire show, and I thought it was set up really, really well, and they did a really good job on ROH last week. If you get HDNet, you should try and just sample Ring of Honor. It's not for everybody, yeah. but especially if you're kind of just jaded with what WWE and TNA are doing, it's completely different, which is sure. a positive.
Mm-hmm. Daniel Longworth, that video about how great the WWE was touching. I found it amusing you guys have just reviewed the most tasteless angles of all time a week before they aired this video and urged fans to stand up for WWE. Fuck the WWE. Fuck you, Vince McMahon.
He actually wrote Vince McMahon. Yes, it was. The timing was kind of interesting.
It is funny. And by the way, John, great job on that power pole edit that you did.
Well, when I saw that the video on Raw Monday night, I was like, This is a layup.
This is exactly. All this stuff is prime for parodying, and I'm surprised not more of it has gone up yet.
Could you believe the WWE on Wednesday sent out a press release because the Democratic Party had filed a complaint with the Federal yeah. Election Committee about this somehow being tied with Linda, this stand up for WWE campaign,
which is completely illegal. Yeah, you can't have a corporation back a political
exactly.
campaign.
So the WWE sent out a press release stating that we are not going to be bullied into an organization stopping our First Amendment rights and our freedom of speech. And I find it awesome that all these YouTube videos, the comments section is disabled. So you can't leave comments on these videos.
Oh, the irony.
Oh, the WWE. Muhammad, I love how John pointed out the up and down promo style of HBK in the 90s, but you forgot to mention how every sentence included the Heartbreak Kid and the World Wrestling Federation. Towards the end of his career, he replaced both those two with You Know and The Lord.
Haven't noticed. Jay Hunter, probably should have mentioned this here weeks ago, but why weren't the gates open for Raw and SmackDown talent to appear on each other's show as soon as Hell in a Cell ended, as they want to promote Raw versus SmackDown? They can resume the normal split brand storylines after bragging rights. Isn't that the whole point of Raw versus SD, that all other conflicts are temporarily set aside to fight for their brand? Wouldn't that have made the pay-per-view much more important and actually have a chance at a good or at least average pay-per-view buy? I'll also mention that regardless, the last few Raws I found to be... I get confused.
Dude, I hate it. I hate it.
I don't know where
I never knew how to talk about... For now on, guys, if you let's make this easy. Let's say RAW is review away, and just put WWE Raw if you're referencing the TV show.
Or maybe big case RAW for.
Okay, fine. That's easier. If it's all capital letters, that's review away. Capital RAW is just the show. Because, dude, it happens to me all the time when I read that now.
Yeah. Anyway, the last few Monday Night Raws I found to be entertaining, thanks to the Cena-Nexus storyline. He wrote C-Nexus, I'm not going to say that. That could have waited until the next night after bragging rights, though. I realize the brand split is a joke, but if WWE are going to do it, they should really go full out with it. What are your thoughts, John? Should they have just said, after Hell in a Cell, no brand split for this month?
To be honest,
if it would mean anything.
I don't think anybody cares about Raw versus SmackDown. It happens on every single 3-hour Raw.
Yeah.
It happens so frequently that there's no,
exactly.
there's nothing special attached to it. And what's annoying is that everyone kind of panned bragging rights last year, and I think the concept could work if you protected it.
If you made it worthwhile.
If all year long it was a big deal that SmackDown won this match, it would mean something this year if they had referenced the trophy, if they had referenced winning over Raw every single sure. time they interacted. Like, it's just like, there's nothing to it.
Yeah, if there was something real at stake here that would last into the next month, even, that would make it worthwhile. But
to be honest, I don't find the draft even means anything anymore. Like,
sure.
Every year it used to be, you know, you shake stuff up. Mm-hmm. Everyone's been on every brand yep. right now. It's like, I would just end the draft. It's like, these are our rosters. Mm-hmm. We'll bring up new talent to each roster, but because year to year, it's like half the guys who are on Raw are on SmackDown now and vice versa. Yeah. That you, there's no one that you attach other than like Cena to Raw.
Well, and again, you have guys like CM Punk fighting for Raw after being on Raw for 1 week, and you have Edge on SmackDown.
Ezekiel Jackson. Like,
but the going back to the concept of this show is really a one that tells me as a viewer that I'm able to skip this month's pay-per-view and not miss a beat, in the storylines that actually matter.
Yeah.
So why would I pay for this? Christopher Kunkel, isn't this? Oh, this is yours, sorry.
What the hell happened to TNA? I've watched the promotion since 2003. I was in Korea, and we got a tape-delayed version of the weekly pay-per-views. When I got to Fort Campbell in 2004, they were still running the shows out of Nashville, and me and a few friends would make the hour drive every Wednesday. Then the move to Fox Sportsnet, the internet shows for a few months, and eventually Spike TV. They still have one of the most talented rosters in wrestling, but it's still all about the old guard. I can honestly say that I'm glad I'm not able to watch it out here in the sandbox, because it would probably depress me. I listened to your review for Bound for Glory 2005 and wonder how a company could fall so far in just a few years. I have no doubt that TNA is in much worse shape than they were 5 years ago when they had a fraction of the television outlet that they have now.
Yeah. But just getting back to that, I mean, compare WCW 2000 to WCW 97. Yeah.
It was so much hotter. Yep. Yeah.
Alex R. Stephanie T. Hey, John, you said on Sunday that Cavall had it worse than Bryan, but after last night's Raw, I think you changed your mind. Only Vince would put arguably the best wrestler in the world in a ring to dance. I hope Bryan pulls a Matt Hardy and gets fired ASAP.
Yeah, take your pick with Daniel Bryan, Cavall. I just think I think you're going to see more of just Daniel Bryan in this goofy character now. See, we're giving him a personality. We'll see how it works. Colin Anderson, hey guys, just thought I'd let you know how you helped me get by the weekend, which I spent in a hospital. I was being treated for kidney stones, excruciating by the way, and had to spend 2 full days lying in a hospital bed. To take my mind off the pain, I decided to have my own Review Away marathon and ended up listening to all 15 episodes I have on my iPhone, nodding in and out of sleep the entire time. I even broke hospital rules at night by turning on 3G to download Sunday's show to give me fresh material. Thanks for the great podcast, guys, and keep them coming. They are lifesavers. That is one of the coolest compliments we've gotten.
And to everybody who sends, you know, I'm always personally just surprised that, you know, like, it's just like these podcasts for me, they're just fun. Like, I mean, I'm talking to my friend about pro wrestling, just shooting the shit about bad professional wrestling, and to know that people out there are able to enjoy it as much as, you know, myself doing it, I think is really cool, really cool. So we got Richard Lee. Hey guys. Caught both the Review Away and Raw shows, and as usual, great jobs on both. On the Raw, stand up for WWE. Shouldn't they have done just that for the voters in Connecticut? Rather than subject all of us to that crap? There is such a thing as regional feeds, guys, and God help me, I would have preferred the replay of R-Truth's video than to have seen that. Now onto another subject. A recent South Park episode went after the other thing you guys like, the Jersey Shore. And may I add, it did very well. With the Real Housewives of New Jersey and Salonolicious thrown in it too. Check it out. Anyway, gotta go. Can't wait for Halloween Net Havoc 99 as we set precedent for Dixie Carter and what not to do for a wrestling company.
Have you seen that? South Park? I haven't seen it yet, but tons of people have told me about it.
Yeah, I've been meaning to. And the Jersey Shore cast were interviewed about it too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they said it's a real honor. Scott was scary, but it was a real honor.
Snooki monster. Scott McCullough, I think people should just give a rest to the Daniel Bryan is done chatter. I mean, no offense to ROH, but did you really expect a main eventer in ROH to be slotted in a main event slot in WWE within the first one, heck, even the first 2 years? It's going to take them time. Just give it that. Just enjoy them while they're in ROH like I do, and when they leave for WWE or TNA, realize that their work in ROH means nothing to either Fed. That's fine, but that's just... It's a horrible way to do business, and anyone can say that, oh, well, give him some time and he's going to make it there. It's like, well, based on what? Rob Van Dam was incredibly over when he came in, and by the time WWE was serious about him, that momentum was gone because you had booked him like a mid-carder for so long that no one took him seriously when you wanted to take him to the next step. Jericho had that same problem. He had to leave and reinvent himself and come back to get to as a booked as a real main eventer.
Could you imagine if, like, a Rob Van Dam got the Sheamus push, got the, you know, the Wade Bear push, that somebody who's brand new, completely new, you'd never seen before, but came in and just destroyed everything.
It was so telling when I was reading the reports from the Raw in Seattle 2 weeks ago, where, like, an hour before the show, the audience was chanting for Daniel Bryan, and how that, I brought it up before, of the Raw at the ACC in 2001, when that was the same thing they were doing for RVD, like an hour before the show. And it's like, the audience is ready to accept this guy, and you're being so stubborn. And I find it one thing when it was 2001 and the WWE was so hot with talent that they could be snobs about who they push. And now it's you're so desperate for stars and you have one on your plate and you're ignoring it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying this guy has to be heavyweight champion, but at the same time, he doesn't have to be dancing like a dork either.
You should run with the momentum, not go against it for whatever political reason. I think it's just
what will decide who's over, and not you.
And I understand nobody... ROH, like, how many people actually watch ROH and actually have even seen a Daniel Bryan match in ROH? Maybe not too many.
You know, the fact that Bryan gets this reaction, though, tells me it's more than what they assume.
His reputation is there. I mean, how many people that are UFC fans or fans of Wanderlei Silva have seen Wanderlei Silva in a Pride match? I would say probably the majority. 10%. Yeah, the majority have not yet. People see Wanderlei Silva as a superstar in the UFC based on his old reputation alone. And that's all you need, you know? You only need a section of the audience to see this guy as a serious thing, and then the rest will just spread.
Next one's Chris in LA.
Okay, Chris in LA. I just got done listening to an episode from a few weeks back where you guys were debating the appropriateness of Chris Jericho hitting China on the hand with the hammer. I see John's point, but I must say I agree with Wei on this one. China was a woman that they had to go toe-to-toe with the men. She actually beat Jericho fairly at a pay-per-view. For the sake of storyline purposes, she has a fighting chance against all the men in that company. I think of China similarly to the way I think of Chung Li from Street Fighter or Sonya Blade from Mortal Kombat. Yes, sometimes they get their asses kicked by the men, but they also win sometimes. China's got to be put in that category.
All right. I just don't know about a man hitting a woman with a hammer, how that really is, how that translates.
Hitting on
It's
the
one
hand-
thing to go, like, a physical angle with a man and a woman like China. And it's another for, what was, I don't remember the specific angle, but didn't you say she was tied up in a chair?
I didn't even see it. I just read it.
I don't know the specific angle. Tying a man hitting a woman with a hammer.
But hitting the hand with a hammer, I don't know. Yeah, I'll have to see the angle to really guess it. But on the surface, I didn't think of it that much.
Jack Pisco, I'm surprised the Buried Alive match is happening for the pay-per-view. I mean, it's not very PG at all. That's true. I'd like to point out that Miz's Raw shirt had a C patch on it, which was a nice touch considering you're supposed to differentiate a pecking order for the teams. You ask why Brett wasn't on Raw last Monday, and the answer is simple. It would have diminished the importance of the Raw versus SmackDown angle they were pushing. Can't be pushing Brett when there's a pay-per-view to sell. Yes, because Monday was such a home run show in selling that pay-per-view that there was no room for Bret Hart. In any capacity.
They could have had him come out for Tyson and DH. They could have had him come out for the Natalya Lay Cool match at the very least.
You could have had Brett come out and cut a promo on the SmackDown team with the Raw team in the ring.
Sure.
Would it have killed them to say that Brett's going to be in the corner of Team Raw this Sunday?
Okay, but then who do you have to counter that on SmackDown?
Don't necessarily have to have someone to counter it.
But then you're positioning Raw... Then is Bret Hart a heel on SmackDown? Anyway, I don't think Bret's going to be at the pay-per-view.
Fine.
Well, it would have just been a really nice little
You can't
reaction.
Tell me there wasn't a role for Bret Hart on a show in Calgary.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. Completely.
We had time for R-Truth video, but we didn't have time for Bret Hart.
You got to know the lyrics, Sean.
Of course.
You have to know. Get Buck.
All right. Let's finish off with Tim Radcliffe.
By the way, Jack thinks my car is a RAV4. No, it is not.
Oh,
a RAV4.
Yeah, I missed that.
Tim Radcliffe, I enjoy listening to your podcast as it allows me to keep up with a show that I don't watch anymore. I was disgusted with the angle between Jeff Jarrett and Kurt Angle, and Kurt calling his ex-wife a slut. Although given Angle's history of abuse towards women, I'm not surprised. Isn't there still a restraining order against him? All of this while a highly publicized trial of a guy pleading guilty to killing two women. Okay, what? While a highly publicized trial of a guy...
Okay, I get what he's saying, but it's a big stretch of a guy calling a woman a slut and...
Who's this guy?
This guy, Colonel Williams.
This
incredibly graphic trial that's been going on, what he did to these two women.
I was also disappointed that your program in Reveal Way did not take a stronger stand against this. Sure. I saw it, but I didn't think anything of it. It was just trash talking. Either your program or Reveal Way recently had a list of the top worst angles in wrestling. I think there is now a new number one. This is your number one? Kurt Angle calling his ex-wife a slut?
Let's finish the email.
Yeah. Both shows have recently compared wrestling to UFC. While UFC builds drama between the athletes in the cage, while wrestling / TNA is condoning / perpetuating violence against women, either verbal or physical. As men, when are we going to stop this violence against women, whether on TV or in TV and angles or in real life? When are we going to do that?
Okay, I don't think that comment was perpetuating violence. In fact, Spike even censored the word on it. If there was one thing that bothered me, it was that Kurt Angle is this babyface, and to me, it's just I'm never a fan of those promos. Like, especially in TNA, if you watch enough of the women's promos, it's almost without a beat. Each promo is attacking the women as a slut or a whore or calling out that she has fake tits. To me, it's just like...
You see a lot worse on...
It goes back to the heels and the baby faces that you're... They just... The people writing these promos on the women, there's clearly a theme there of like this kind of this hatred towards women. Like, you can listen to these promos, and believe me, I've talked to people that have worked for this company who have... echoed the same sentiments about these themes against the women, and it comes out very clearly on the promos. I'm not a big fan of it. At the same time, it's not the most tasteless thing I've ever seen in wrestling.
No, absolutely not. Kurt Angle calling his ex-wife a slut. I mean, I think it was just something that made to get a reaction, but it didn't make me think. Like,
you can question why that gets
worse.
A babyface pop. Of calling this woman a slut. I mean, what does that say about?
I think people are sympathetic.
The audience and
people are sympathetic to Kurt Angle in that situation. I mean, his wife left him for Jeff Jarrett. But anyway, that's besides the point. anyway, it's a fun little email.
All right. So that's all of our feedback. You can always leave your own at the Live Audio Wrestling's Review Away Facebook group. Just search for it, and there's also a link in all of the daily updates at liveaudiowrestling.com, where you can also join the Law Facebook group as well. And we will be back on Tuesday with Review of Raw and
the finale of Jersey Shore,
which wrapped up this past Thursday on MTV. And looking ahead to next week, Wei, at first I was planning that let's look at the next WCW pay-per-view after this one and see how Russo and Ferrara dealt with a month into their reign. I need some time, though, before we go back to WCW.
Sure.
It's too much to take at once after this Halloween Havoc show. So maybe we can go to that in November or something. But I thought it would be interesting to see how the WWF was dealing with the loss of Russo and Ferrara. And look at the Survivor Series, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, from November of 1999. So this would be a full month after Russo and Ferrara had left the company, and it was fully the creative direction had been put into other people's hands, and see how they recovered with the loss of Russo and Ferrara. And that show features China versus Chris Jericho.
Beautiful. So let's see how they stand up.
Yes. How did they stand up in 1999, folks, when sponsors were leaving at a rapid rate because of the non-PG content of the WWE? And in addition to that, thanks to Bob Mould for joining us on the podcast today to chat about WCW's booking at the time. You can check that whole interview out in the download section of liveaudiowrestling.com. And Wei, some music to go out with.
Well, let's end with something from our guest this evening. And let's go out with something from Husker Du.
Walking around with your head in the clouds, it makes no sense at all. So you're so sure, but you're walking so fail, but I don't see these things that way. See these things that way. Walking around with your head in the clouds, it makes no sense at all. So you're so sure, but you're walking so tall, it makes no sense at all. Is it important to yelling so loud, it makes no sense at all. Walking around with your head in the clouds, makes no difference at all. Yeah, makes no sense at all. No difference at all. Walking around with your head in the clouds, it makes no sense at all.
Oh,